Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 421 of the Roguecast, recorded June 27th, 2023, Mazteca or Bust. All right, here we are, dead of summer, last week of June. Last week of comics for June.
Yes. We're making it through the summer, and soon it'll be beautiful, beautiful fall. Just hold out a little longer.
But we have to go.
And it'll be all dreary, rain, and
I'll take it because
I'll be as miserable as you all are now.
I'm not miserable.
This entire week is supposed to be like 110 plus.
Yeah.
No, my AC can't take it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Nick, I saw this thing the other day that was like... Like, good news, the temperatures will be lowering a little bit by the weekend, down to just 100.
Right. I mean...
That's where we are.
If we're at 90 and it feels like 100 outside, I'm okay with that.
Nope, Nick, this is how you test your endurance. This is how we show that we are mighty Texans.
Yes.
This is... You gotta...
I don't remember the summers being this bad in Texas.
Well, no, there is a little thing called climate change. It's all getting worse.
Yeah. I'm just like, if it's just now, what's it going to be in, like, 5 years?
150.
You gotta, no, it takes a little while. Yeah.
There's
a solid chance we'll be dead before Road Warrior times.
Yes.
But until then, we have to prepare for Road Warrior times by hardening ourselves against the elements.
I like to think of Dark Sun instead of Road Warrior.
Is that cannibalistic halflings?
Because that's how you get cannibalistic.
I mean, I would prefer, at this point.
Dark Sun, for people who don't know, is a D&D setting from the 80s that was on, like, a... Twin Sun world that was like a scorched desert planet with just small pockets of civilization, and it was like a
Dragon Kings ruled everything.
Dark D&D setting. Yeah, slavery was still in act. There were the Thrykreen Mantis people were one of the playable races, and you made two characters because you were expected to have one character die.
By the way, I bet 75% to 90% of our audience knows what Dark Sun is.
Yeah, but I know that there's some who don't.
All right.
Do you remember the actual name of the world of Dark Sun?
Yes. It's not Arrakis.
It's not Dark Sun, but you're in the ballpark.
It's, oh man, I forgot. What is it?
I believe it's Athas.
Athas, you're correct.
A-T-H-A-S.
Or is that a city-state?
I think it's the world. I think it's the world. But it is a cool setting. Like, you should go Google Dark Sun or Athas and read about it.
They last produced it during 4th edition.
And, yeah, so it's not that far back. And honestly, if they had with 5th edition D&D, I think, been doing their jobs a little bit better.
Yep.
They did a pretty solid job. They've done overall well with it.
Until they started sending out Pinkertons.
But I think they would have put out good source books for a lot of those settings that they're only now, as they're sort of at the tail end of the edition, getting around to Spelljammer and stuff.
We should have had Dark Sun a while back.
Dark Sun, Dragonlance, Planescape.
We're finally getting to them here at the tail end of the edition.
I wonder if there's any way they could do Mazteca.
I don't know. Culturally, it may be a bit dicey.
That's a very sort of obscure one, but it was a fantasy take on like a South American culture.
Yeah.
So. Aztecs, Mayans, and things like that, but it still had fantasy elements. And I remember reading one of the books, and they were like battling kobolds and stuff in the jungles.
Yeah.
And it still had that like Game of Thronesian politics among like the different tribes. So it was like a fairly sophisticated take on them. And you know, like the warrior, like Jaguar Paw, would go out to defeat them. And I was like, it seemed cool to me. But yes, you have to be a little tricky, cautious about it. I think what you do is you get, you know, input from the culture that it's at least drawn from.
Yeah.
Even though it is also fantasy. But, you know, if we're not even seeing Dark Sun, which is a pretty mainstream-ish, more mainstream one, probably not going to get around to Mazteca.
Yeah, we'll see.
Nevertheless, that's what I'm rallying for. That's what the hill I'll die
on. Mazteca
or bust.
Mazteca or death.
I need to get that trending on Twitter. If y'all could go ahead and work on that for me.
Mazteca or bust.
What's a Mazteca?
What's a Mazteca with you?
Get out of here.
All right.
It's the Cary Grant gif.
We just had our free RPG day.
Yeah.
Went really well.
It went well.
We got rid of everything.
We basically cleaned it out. Yeah, and that was with a little bit of overstock from the previous year. We think we might bump it up a little bit next year.
Yep. So there'll be new stuff next year.
But thanks for everybody for coming out and making it a success.
There were some cool, like, bigger things in there. Like, there were full sets of dice.
like yeah, a couple of dice, them. Four miniatures, I think, that we had to, like, they were, like, you know, with those Learn to Paint kits.
Yeah.
Yeah. The early birds got the worms.
They did.
Yes.
They got better than worms.
There were dice trays.
Dice trays and stuff.
But also, I was just, like, I saw that there was a 5th edition Legend of the Five Rings adventure, Pathfinder, Starfinder, G.I. Joe and Transformers, RPG.
Avatar.
Mm-hmm. Avatar, that was one of the big ones, and we actually had a decent number of those.
Root.
Root, Vampire the Masquerade.
It was a good selection.
It was a good selection. And the fun stuff like the indie compilation RPGs that they do every year.
You know, what's funny is because Dave, because you were the one who set up all the stuff, Nick and I were the ones who worked the morning.
Right.
I never saw everything that was on the table.
Right, and I saw it, but I didn't see anything about, like, what people were talking about. So I didn't see any of the buzz.
We were like the blind man with the elephant.
Oh, interesting.
A free RPG day.
I have inadvertently grabbed the elephant's testicles. What is this?
Oh, no.
I'm sorry, listeners.
No one talked about the dangers of blind men and elephants.
This is the heat stroke that we get because we live in climate change times.
But we do still have many cool things coming up this summer. This coming weekend, starting on Saturday and running through Tuesday, we're going to do a July 4th sale.
Right.
So what we're going to do is we have about 15 board games that we have. Either they're a Kickstarter or they were things that we got full case orders of that we've had for a while. And we will sell them eventually, but honestly, we have too much stuff and not enough space. So we're discounting. So we're going to discount 15 board games, 25% each. Mm-hmm. We don't do a lot of sales. We're doing one this weekend. So if you want to try out some games, there's some really good games in there. There's some Kickstarter exclusive stuff. You'll get like the fancy Kickstarter editions. Mm-hmm. Several, I think I own several of these games, so I can talk them up. But yeah, you can see the full list on our website and on Facebook, and come out starting on Saturday, running through Tuesday. We are also going to be, we just decided this, we haven't announced it yet, but we're going to be discounting the Tarrasque and the Yawning Portal and a couple of other big minis. To sort of get those into people's hands. So 25% off or maybe more on big, big, giant minis.
Mm-hmm. Nice. You've been needing a boss for your players who think they're all that. Would you like to consider the Tarrasque?
There's nothing quite so satisfying as putting a giant Tarrasque mini on the table and being like, all right, here's what's coming.
The kaiju of D&D.
Yep.
Are we also about to begin our summer reading program?
That's the next thing, yes. We have a summer reading challenge. This was a spearheaded is the brainchild of Serena, one of our staffers.
Yep.
And she is sort of our community outreach person. Yep. She's been doing a lot of that. And she's responsible for those bookmarks we got.
Yep.
She is the one who's been giving out stickers for your kids.
Yeah, people love those stickers. Oh, my God.
She's the one who does all the displays, like the pride display.
Yep. I know I've mentioned this before, Rennie, but occasionally a parent will, like, buy some graphic novel for their kid. And then Serena will, like, offer her, like, one of, like, their sticker.
Uh-huh.
And the kid will get a sticker and clearly be, like, 10 times more delighted about the sticker than they were what their parent just bought.
Yep.
But actually, it's usually just cool bonus stuff. It cracks me up sometimes when the kid is like, that's the thrill of the day.
Yeah.
but they work out very well.
But anyway,
this is like inspired by almost like those old, like, pizza party things that you used to do through, like, Pizza Hut and stuff like that.
Yep.
Where you read X number of books, there's a little, real simple, like, worksheet where all you have to do is
write your favorite part.
Just like a line or two about it, and
it's not a book report. You just got to prove that you read it.
Yeah, this is not some super intense grilling that we're gonna do. And
some kid works the system with like five reports of like my favorite part was the table of contents.
Yep. No, Randy. They'll go and say, "Hey, AI, write a long book report in the style of William Faulkner about the merits of this Garfield compilation.
write a review of this Garfield compilation in the style of James Joyce.
Oh, God.
In the style of Cormac McCarthy. No punctuation whatsoever.
That's right. No, but I think this is a super cool idea. Like any of you who've got. It's like for, I think, 16
and under. There are two groups. There's the all ages. There's the younger ages and the teenage. There are packets, so you just come in, ask for a packet. You'll get there's a sort of suggested reading list. You don't have to buy them here. We would appreciate it.
Yep, sure.
But you know, if you want to get into the library or you already have some, that's fine, too.
Yep.
You read those books. And then the first 10 kids to turn them in will get owlbear coins.
Right. This is essentially our gift certificate in $10 denomination. So you get a little $10 bonus in this very cool coin format.
But everybody gets a cool gift bag with some like notepads and erasers and cool stuff that we put together. So
yep. And like really honestly, like this is one of those things where part of the reward is literally the doing of it, reading cool graphic novels and stuff like that.
Yep.
And Serena put together a list, right?
Yes, there's a list in the packets.
Yep.
Yes. Suggested books. Yes. Yep. So yeah. That's sort of our big push for July. We also have our board game day coming up. I think some of those games are filling up. People can still sign up for them. We've got 8 games running across the whole day. That's going to be Saturday, July 15th. Right.
And that is it's essentially a come out and learn to play.
Yep.
You'll sort of be doing a brisk, like, you know, hour-ish for each of the games.
Yep.
And you and John will be running that sort of simultaneously, like with you at one table and him at another.
And then we'll switch.
And then we'll switch, and people won't know what to
do. Mid-game.
But yeah, it's a chance to come out and learn about some of these board games without having to, you know, plunk down $50, $80, whatever they are, immediately.
Yep.
And you can take their measure.
Yes.
Match yourself against the game.
And these are all, like, favorite games. There's a lot of good games in there. Star Realms is one of them. Starship Captains, Azul, Clank, Dice Throne, Flamecraft, a lot of really big popular games.
Yeah, so you can see what people are all buzzing about.
I believe these are all games that I own and enjoy, so...
If you don't like it, you get to slap Randy.
Yeah, you get to slap Dave.
What?
Yep, coming on Sunday, slap
you're
Dave.
You're fine, you won't be here.
If you don't like it, just keep it to yourself.
We got some new games in this week. We've got the Disney villain Sinister Spoons. Here's the game Spoons. Like an old, the game, it's an old game Spoons.
I think I may have heard of it, but I never played it.
So this is just that, but with like these cool plastic spoons that look like Disney villains in them.
Is this so like pixie sticks? Where you pick them up?
It's sort of a pickup kind of game. Yeah, yeah. It's
interesting.
It's a it's an old. It's like one of these family games everybody's played. So
I am familiar with. I guess pickup sticks is I think what I played as a kid.
But this is spoons.
But it was the same idea.
I don't.
Do you, a little bit
do
about
you hurl spoons at people?
I don't know. I feel like I've heard of it. And John, our staffer John, asked about it. He's like, "Is it just spoons?" And I'm like, "Probably," but I don't actually know. I don't remember the game. I don't know how it works. But it's a game. People know it. Russell, what's the game Spoons like?
Yeah, please send us a message letting us know the full extent of your spoon knowledge.
Yes, all things spoons.
Yes.
We also got the Walt Disney Animated, which is a... already sold out. We should get a restock this week.
Yeah.
But it's a co-op game from the creator of the Villainous series.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you're like building... Are you building animation studios in it, I think?
I think so. The hype was real on this one. It sold out almost instantly.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a really good game.
Can I run my studio like cruelly with low wages and minimal?
I think you have to.
You mean exactly like Disney?
In like every animation studio ever.
There must be. You know, it must be like their way of making it like kind of lighthearted. Must be all about like recruiting talent.
It may be not as like diehard as like Sony. Sony seems particularly.
I think Sony's no better or worse than anybody else. They're all terrible. We got Dawn of Ulos, which is a role-player tale. This is set in the role-player universe. And it's like, you're the gods, and you are like trying to earn the favor of your worshippers kind of thing. It's another Kickstarter game. Looks really cool. And then we got The Witcher Old World, which is a big adventure game set in The Witcher.
Yeah.
I believe I looked it up on Board Game Geek the other day, and it's one of those games that with a high rating, like 8.3 or something like that. I was
this
like,
week
how?
Is Witcher?
Who?
This week is Witcher week, because we get the board game. Witcher Season 3 premieres on Friday.
Yep.
Is that the final one with Cavill. What's his face?
Yep.
Before he goes off and plays Superman again. Oh, no.
What are the odds that Netflix cancels it before Liam Hemsworth actually gets to play The Witcher?
I mean, that'd be a little sad. It'd
be kind of funny.
Also funny.
Funny.
Well, if the fans had their way, I think that would might be the case.
Well, Netflix definitely is going to need some money, so.
And his lack of appearance in the DC movies, if he felt like they did him wrong, he's probably having a funny, good laugh about the Flash's box office right now.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's gotta hurt.
He's gonna go on and do a Warhammer thing and make all the money.
Maybe.
Honestly, they'll just pay him in Warhammer toys and they'll be happy.
I mean, yeah, he'll be all right. He'll be all right. The priced out of anybody's budget Warhammer stuff, he'll be getting those for a song.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they can pull off Warhammer to the degree you need to give it its edge,
right.
Which is, it really does need to kind of somewhat gleefully depict fascists.
Yeah.
But I've read some of the books, and there's ways to do it where there's like, they will interact with sort of civilians and other people that do kind of give voice to, non-fascism, say, and normal people.
What?
And there is a sort of, you know, grim, this is just the reality of the world kind of thing where people just have to live with tragedy that's unfolding as this. But, like, can they translate that to a movie that serious aspect of it? And is, like, will America care about something that's really, you know, the British have always loved their fascist heroes like Judge Dredd. We saw how well the Judge Dredd movie did.
Yeah.
Cult success, but that's it.
You're talking about the Stallone one, right?
No, I'm talking about the other one. It wasn't a big success, was it? No,
the it was not. Dredd, the Carl Urban one?
Dredd was not a fan success,
not box office.
It's a cult favorite, but it's never getting that sequel.
Hey, I like the Stallone one.
I'm only talking box office here. I'm like, can it make a dent in the American market?
Yeah, that's the thing. The question of whether it's good and whether it succeeds are two different questions.
Yeah.
Because Dredd's great, but it did not succeed.
Right, I like Dredd too.
Yeah.
I think if I could, like, excise that human scab from it.
Rob Schneider.
Yeah. Long may he burn in hell.
But we get him on the Sante.
The movie itself is better than you'd think it would be.
I don't think it's a great Judge Dredd movie.
Right, it's kind of its own take on Judge Dredd.
Like Starship Troopers.
Which is super fun. Starship Troopers is a better movie than Judge Dredd. It is kind of it is like the Americanized Judge Dredd, you know, helmet taken off, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
But anyway, I'm still hoping that the Warhammer movie could come across because it is a rich lore to the setting if you can plug into it.
Yeah. Caiaphas Cain or nothing.
I
think he would be good at it.
I don't think you start with it.
I think that would be a good entry point for people who know nothing of the Warhammer, and you kind of get a larger look.
You
start with Space Marines. You start with somebody
is recruited, yeah.
But that's like doing Black Hawk Down for 10 episodes.
No, you start with someone getting recruited into the Star of Space Marines.
Well, I'll say this, like, it's not
aren't they
like
born and bred for the Space Marines?
No, they recruit them for planets.
Yeah, one of the books I read on it that had, like, the Space Wolf dudes, they're basically from a planet that's, like, a Viking planet. Like, it's literally I think it is made, you know, I don't know what the deal is supposed to be, but, it's his name is, like, Ragnar and, like, Viking names and stuff like that. And they actually have their bond with these giant feral wolves and stuff on the planet. And those guys come, and they, like, it is brutal. Like, they're, like, even though they're about to, like, he's going to have to bond with one of them, the guy who gets picked, it's like they don't know that, like, every, like, 5 years or 10 years or whatever, the space gods come down in their spaceship or whatever they are, and they make them fight in an arena to the death, and, like, the 10 people who survive get to go and become the next generation of space wolves. And that's, like, just the beginning of their brutal training. So, like, if they did this right, you should be at the end of it thinking, these guys are scum. But also, like, I don't know quite how they find the balance. I think they kind of do a little bit of the but chaos is so bad that it's just how it is. And I'm like, well, I don't want some kind of weird ends justify the mean secret racism movie. Right. This is the balance that they have to find.
Yeah,
they have to figure it out.
I agree.
Caiaphas Cain, though, Nick is talking about, if people haven't read the Warhammer books, he's supposedly kind of ripped off from Blackadder by the author's own admission. And it is about a guy who is, like, one of the non-believers. In a legion of space fascists, he's the guy who pretends he's one.
He's a little bit of a coward.
He is a coward. He's a total coward who's always trying to be, like,
but
you
he
know,
always, like, does big things, regardless.
Right. Like, I know that in the first book that I read with him in it, like, there's a bit where he's, like, he thinks that the front line is just going to get wrecked in this, and, like, all his troops are going to get decimated, so he's, like, I've heard reports that they might be trying to flank us in the mountains or whatever. He's like, I better take a special unit to investigate. And, like, everybody always sees whatever he does in the best light. They're like, what a brave man he is. So clever. But then he goes off to the mountains, and, like, it turns out, maybe not what he was thinking, but something big is going down there. And so he still ends up in the thick of it, and so he does heroic things. And he has a smelly second in command.
It's true.
It's more like his he's not a second in command. It's like the guy who's like
he's
his
like
scrounger.
He's like an aide-de-camp or something.
Yeah, aide-de-camp is exactly right. He can get stuff when they need it, but he's a big old slobby
dude.
Would
you call him Major Domo?
No, Major Domo implies somebody with real deep knowledge. This guy's like,
he's a little bit of
this guy's like, yeah, I can find you some matches. Anyway, we've gone off on a sidetrack about Warhammer 40K. What else do we got here?
I don't know. I lost track. I blacked out. What happened?
It's probably for the best. Are we? Do we
it's
have any
talk
other
about comics.
Store stuff? All right, let's talk about comics.
Let's talk about comics for June 28th.
Okay.
And let's talk about this. A lot of indie comics this week, actually.
Yeah.
There are some notable, like, City Boy number 2, Green Arrow number 3.
Yep.
I feel like there's some of the
Batman Marvel
stuff.
Brave and the Bold, number,
and Brave
2.
And the Bold number 2.
Right, and for those of you who are Tom King fans, that's continuing the Tom King.
I will say there is a number 3 of World Tree that continues to be amazing.
Yeah, and World Tree, I'm really loving World Tree.
That's Tinian's horror book about the secret architecture beneath the internet.
Evil internet.
The evil internet, and the, like, man, it's like, the story's more sophisticated than you'd think, because that, like, sounds like it could be the premise of a really dumb movie.
Randy will tell you not to do this. I'm going to tell you to do it. He actually got the URL, worldtree.net.
Uh-huh.
There is a password at the end of this issue.
Here's my
I dare you to put it in.
Here's my comic about the evil internet. Go visit this pastor. Just go visit this website.
As Dave would say, he's going to you'd tempt fate. You'd do it.
Oh, I would do it. Yeah, for sure.
You're all are both going to get possessed by the evil internet.
I still need to do the elevator game that they showed in that episode of Evil.
This is probably true. James Tinian's long game. He's been wanting to turn you all into internet.
Right.
Zombies.
He's like makes you a fan of his horror thing, and then he tricks you into going into his internet labyrinth.
But while we're talking about James Tinian,
yep.
He has a new book this week.
Yeah, he does.
His Substack. So it's a digital comic turned into a print comic.
It continues his tradition of long titles, like he also did Something is Killing the Children and That Nice House on the Lake. So brace yourself for The Oddly Pedestrian Life of Christopher Chaos.
So I do want to clarify a little bit, though. This is a story based on that James Tinian came up with. The script is by Tate Bromble.
Oh, it's not, so he's not the writer.
And
okay.
Art by Isaac Goodhart.
Okay. I thought he wrote it. Okay.
So he is involved in this.
What's funny is it did feel like him. Like, it felt like his kind of dialogue. But it is a quirkier thing than he usually does, and it's not horror. Well, not quite.
Not quite. It's like horror adjacent.
It's horror adjacent, but it's a kind of about like a loner kid who's almost like got some kind of like beautiful mind kind of.
Yeah.
He sees all these secret
equations.
He sees
the patterns and equations.
And it is drawn like, if you've ever seen the gif of the lady, I forget who the actress was, looking around confusedly while like equations float around in space around her. Well, this guy is going through the same thing, but he's like a queer teenager who's struggling with his identity, but also struggling because he just lives a different life than everybody. He's like constantly seeing all this weirdness.
And he's got some sort of power. Not only can he see all these equations, he radiates energy at times.
Right.
So there's definitely something odd about him.
And he's a bit of a potential, like, when he kind of taps into this deep knowledge, he's almost a little mad scientist-y.
Yes. Think Frankenstein on a lower scale.
Yeah, yeah. Nick, you mentioned, like, a little bit of a Tim Burton vibe to this. Those Tim Burton outcast heroes, you know, that Edward Scissorhands and stuff like that. But also a little bit of Frankenweenie, I'm going to say. There might be a little Frankenstein stuff going on here. Anyway, we don't want to reveal too much about it. But, like...
But there are definitely supernatural elements to this. There's a broader story about his
lineage. I was trying to figure out if that supernatural stuff will in any way be revealed to be like some super science-y thing.
Maybe so.
But
I
don't
know.
I could see that. Yes, it goes in places, directions I didn't expect.
Yeah, I agree. I actually found it to be rather enjoyable.
Yeah, it's kind of lighthearted because... I mean, I will spoil one thing. He seems to be confessing his life to you, the listener, at the beginning.
Yes.
And throughout the book, actually. He's like, oh, this is where things went wrong for me, or this is how my day was at school. And he's talking about all the weird stuff that happened to him.
But he's actually not.
He's
talking to the reader.
He's not talking to the reader. He's talking to a pigeon.
Yeah. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
And then... things happen.
Yeah. By the way, the pigeon is shockingly well drawn.
Yes.
This part where he's like petting its little chest and his little tuft, and it's like looks all kind of like happy and like it's cooing. It's really well drawn. It reminded me of the kind of artists that Ed Brubaker worked with on Catwoman and stuff like that.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's good art. Anyway, it's a change from him. It's not the horror stuff or superhero stuff you're used to from Tinian, and it is a collaboration, like Nick would pointed out. But I think it's worth checking out.
I think so.
It's a fun kind of quirky coming-of-age story. What did they call it in the thing? Invincible meets Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
We also got the Starfinder comic in, Angels of the Drift. They've done Pathfinder comics before. This is the first Starfinder comic, and I really liked this.
I know nothing of this universe, other than I've been told it's Pathfinder in a fantasy setting.
Yep, or future setting.
Or future setting.
Yep. That's right.
Magic still
happens, though.
But I was actually really into this. It felt just kind of a fun world to play in. There's lots of like the whole drift and kind of the hyperspace dimension.
Yeah, the drift is how they do hyperspace in Starfinder, basically, and they open with this. This also ties into the game, but basically there's a big hyperspace dimension created by one of their gods, the Triune God.
Yep.
And he gave it as a gift to the sentients, like, here is how you can go faster than light travel.
Right.
And
it would be as if, like, humans and Klingons and Romulans and everybody else.
Did he realize
in Star Trek
that might have been a bad idea?
Well, maybe, because there's been a thing called the Drift Crisis, where people were suddenly shunted out of random locations or vanished, and it's now unstable, and, like, what was the foundation of galactic commerce is now unstable and unpredictable.
Yeah.
And so we pick up there with our heroes, a group of basically an adventuring party. They have a ship.
Are these known heroes or anything?
These are their iconics.
Okay, they're iconics. Okay. They're kind of like what they did with the Pathfinder comic.
If you buy Starfinder books, you're going to see the art of these characters throughout it. It's the ones that they use in certain adventures and pre-generated characters.
That's what they did with
but also, you'll just see them in all the
they
art.
Do a default version of each class gets a default character.
Yeah.
And they try to mix in the various races so you can see a bit. So they're... And in the back of these, they have the write-ups and the stats for each the iconics.
Oh, they have the stats?
Well, the first one, I mean, all the stats are available online.
Sure.
But in this one, they've got the stats for Navasi, who is their basically their leader, their captain.
Oh, that's cool.
But in Starfinder, your group has a starship that is built into it.
Yeah.
So this group has a starship, and they've been hiring out, and they're talking about, well, how are we going to make a living as a, you know, Firefly-type crew when nobody trusts the Drift anymore? And then a servant of a weird celestial type character shows up and is like, I need to get to a planet that doesn't have faster than light travel, and I need to get there before all the corporations do, because they'll exploit it, and I want to give them faster than light travel.
Mm-hmm.
And so they basically get hired by this little creature that looks like a little droid to take them to this planet, only he tried to hire a couple of mercenaries already, and they are now on his tail.
Yeah.
So there's a big fight, a running gun fight through this cool... cyberpunk looking space. The art is really good.
Yeah, I was flipping through it and the art was impressing me.
The character stuff, it's a lot of fun. It is very much a it gives you a sense of Starfinder, whether you if you've never played it or you don't have fondness for it, it will, as Nick discovered, it'll give you a sense of the world.
It does.
You won't be lost. If, like me, you've bought every single Starfinder thing, it will be like, oh, I've been waiting for someone to tell these stories. So
I really liked some of the characters' personalities, and I mean, there are definitely kind of almost Guardians of the Galaxy-esque in some respects. But it was cool. Like most fantasy stories, it starts in a bar.
I have not played Starfinder before, but I have the core book and maybe one or two others, and I really like its setting and lore. I'm just going to mention one thing because I still think it's a neat idea. Their Planet of the Undead is not, like, an evil planet. It's a planet where everybody on the planet was going to die because, like, a meteor that was extremely radioactive was going to come by and just scorch the whole planet and kill everybody with radiation. So, in advance of it, everybody on the planet essentially performs a ritual that makes them die and resurrect as undead.
Yep.
And so, they survive it because when you're already dead, you can survive radiation just fine.
They live on a crazy radioactive planet.
Yep. Yeah, and... And so it's like a neutral planet now. People go there to trade and do commerce, but it is also meant to be a creepy place too. You go there and it's weird.
Do you get radiation poisoning?
I don't know. I think they must have, because I think they want people to visit it and have the weird experience. I think the radiation has probably been shunted off as of now, but it was something they had to do at the time. It might have been before they got warp and stuff like that.
Yeah. Boom has a new book called Creed: The Next Round, which is about Creed, Adonis Creed's daughter, Apollo Creed's granddaughter.
Yeah, well, apparently the Rockyverse, the Creediverse or whatever, will be... We knew they were going to do some TV stuff at some point, or they want to anyway. But I forgot they were going to do comic stuff as well.
I didn't know either. I completely missed that this was happening. This is essentially Creed 4 in a lot of ways.
It's all about his daughter, but it is him and his wife, and they're trying to broaden out the Creed sports brand into more than just boxing gear.
Yep. I was flipping through it, and I haven't read this yet, although I love Creed 1. Like, I think it's actually a great movie, and I haven't seen the other two yet. But, like, the art's really good in it.
So I've only seen Creed 1, and I found this very approachable and really enjoyed it. It's got the voice of the characters, it seems like. It's got
Well, I know Michael B. Jordan
art.
Is involved. Okay. I think he's show-running it, essentially.
Yeah, creative director.
That's kind of cool because, like, you know, so many people love comics, and they can't always find a way in their life if they're, you know, an actor or a director or something like that to get into comics, Or, like, they do, and it's not so good.
Yeah, I'm glad he didn't, like, come in and write this. He's not a writer, right, he's an actor.
Right, but if he's kind of supervising it, if he's watching for the story beats and making sure the character kind of has the, as like almost like series Bible stuff, like, making sure they're staying true to
that's
it.
That's a thing that you should do as part of the role.
That seems pretty cool. Now, I wouldn't have actually guessed that Creed would translate that well to comics.
It does, though.
Not that you couldn't, but just that like people often kind of sports stuff.
Well, it's sports a little manga such a thing.
Right.
But this, not American.
But this is a...
But this is
definitely influenced by sports manga, I
don't
say.
Want to call it like a slice of life book, but it kind of...
No, it's... I mean, this is... It's like what they do in sports manga, although not they don't spend 30 pages on a fight.
Right.
Right.
It's an Americanized version of... But their fight choreography stuff...
That's great.
...is really good.
Well, we have, you know, you've seen Creed 3, and I had already heard... I had at least heard about this, that there was some influence of the kind of manga fight style of, like, Dragon Ball Z and stuff, because Michael B. Jordan grew up on that and loved it.
Yep.
And so it actually makes sense that, Randy, that you notice a little bit, I think, of, like, manga... At least, and I know it's not manga style, but at least influence.
Yeah.
Because that fits what, you know, something that's kind of made its way into the Creed lore.
I think it's a smart move, and it's kind of surprising because I would not have thought a Creed comic would work.
That's a nice surprise.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they.
I can't overemphasize how good the artwork is.
Yeah, the artist who. Their likenesses to Michael B. Jordan and. Oh, God, why am I blanking on her name?
Oh, God, Valkyrie.
Actress.
We've all blanked on it now.
She's too hot. I hate it.
Janelle Monáe was dating blank. Her. Yeah,
her.
Tessa Thompson.
There you go.
Yes.
The only character's got the alliteration.
She does.
The likenesses are really, really good.
That's good. And you know what? That's one of the things that one of the reasons I do want to see Creed 2 and 3. You know, by the way, the only reason I didn't see Creed 2, which I love Creed 1, was because... what's his name wasn't directing it.
Right.
Who's the
Black Panther.
Black Panther guy.
Ryan Coogler.
But it seems like they've done it justice, even if they're not quite the heights of the first one. And
I believe it was Stephen Caple Jr. who did the second one, who did Transformers Rise of the Beasts.
Okay, that's pretty good. But I was going to say, Tessa Thompson... I loved her character in the first one. In some ways, she could have just been a generic love interest.
Yeah.
But she actually had a deeper character than that, and I really liked the character scenes of them talking and stuff. And so, if we're seeing more of her in this, that sounds good to me.
That continues on through all three of the films.
That's cool.
That's
also a reason for me to see those.
Three, two, and three have been on my list, and this actually made me want to watch it again.
I think they're all on Prime right now.
Are they on Prime? I think they're on Paramount Plus.
Oh, they might be on both, but I know they're on Prime because that's where I watched it.
All right. And then I think the only other new stuff we got, there is a graphic novel, Spider-Man Animals Assemble. This is Mike Mahak, who does Cleopatra in Space.
Oh, I didn't actually see that.
Yeah, it came in last week. So this is basically, it's kind of a goofy thing where Spidey, I don't want to give too much away, but it's a kid's comic. Spidey is like hanging around New York. There's a huge fight going on in Central Park, and heroes keep coming and dropping off their pets for Spidey to watch instead of going and fighting in Central Park.
That's kind of adorable,
and it's really funny. Mayak is a great artist. I have two tattoos of his art on my arms.
Yeah.
Both
Spider-Man. If you don't follow him on, you know, like Instagram or Facebook or various social media, you need to, because his stuff is so good.
He's fantastic. And this book is a ton of fun. It's light and goofy. It's definitely all ages, but I really enjoyed it. I would recommend it, especially if you have kids who love Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's fun and silly, and there's a ton of guest stars. All the Avengers are in it. Miss Marvel's in it.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing I can kind of just see looking at it. I would have loved it when I was a kid, because I liked, you know, when I was just getting into superheroes, yes, I did kind of like sometimes want the grown-up adventures.
Yeah.
But, like, when I was, like, really young, I kind of liked stuff that was, like, a little hybrid like this. So this is kind of like an all-ages kids book, but it's kind of Spider-Man, too. It's a comic. The art's super good. So your kid is going to be wanting to, like, draw this.
Yep.
He's going to take inspiration from the artwork. And if your kid already likes drawing Spider-Man or Miles or whatever, that's probably going to be something where he's going to get cool ideas, he or she. That's very awesome.
And then we got Nightwing Volume 3, the hardcover collecting... Tom Taylor's Nightwing run. This is sort of the leading into the launch of Titans. It is called the Battle for Bloodhaven's Heart. It was the big competition with him and Blockbuster.
Yep.
It is in a lot of ways the end of that part of his run and the start of the next part.
Is that the point at which he started getting into talking about the Foundation and stuff that had to do with Alfred's death.
Yeah, yeah.
And man, there's some.
I mean, that's been there from the beginning, but yeah,
right. But he like deepens it in that one, and I feel like it's one of those things. Like, yes, there's a cool plot with villains and stuff like that, but sometimes that my favorite moments in Nightwing are those character moments or the Bat Family kind of deep moments with he and Barbara, he and Batman, remembering Alfred and all that stuff. And you know, the cool thing with Tom Taylor is that he's stood the test of time. You know, like, he's still got a ways to go, but he's been basically doing great projects for, like, 5 to 10 years.
Yep.
If you include, starting with, roughly with Injustice, even though his career did begin before then. But, like, Nightwing has not faltered. He's done a ton of good projects, you know. Deceased is one of the other big ones.
Dark Knights of Steel.
Dark Knights of Steel. He did the thing over at Marvel. That miniseries
Dark Ages.
Dark Ages. And, you know, he's rocking right now on the new Titans book. So, like, it's nice to have somebody who you can really kind of count on.
Yeah.
You should just be picking up these Nightwing collections.
All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about basically a whole bunch of TV. All right, it's a little bit of a light news, but we did have a couple last-minute things coming to talk about.
Breaking news.
Yes.
One of which is pretty big.
Pretty big. But first, let's talk about the trailers we watched.
Okay.
So, what was the name of the first one we watched, Nick, that was the Make a Q trailer? I didn't write that one down.
That was called Fear the Night.
Fear the Night.
Which I was like, this trailer hit, I haven't watched it, but it's a horror movie. Dave was like, if it's the one I saw, it looked awful. And we were like, okay, well, let's at least try it.
And then he gave us the premise, and it was like a bachelorette party with a home invasion thing, and I'm like, oh, that sounds really bad. So I was pretty supposed to not like it.
Yeah.
But then it opens with Maggie Q being a badass in a convenience store against these rednecks.
By the way, I think a bachelorette party versus home invasion is a premise that has promise.
Yeah.
But obviously it has to be... It's got to be done right. Like, I don't think any of us are like, oh, I love home invasion movies where they come in and terrorize people and scare you. But that we've, at least a few of the exceptions include the Purge movies.
Yes. Yep.
But especially the first one, which was very home invasion-y. The movie Hush from Mike Flanagan.
Yep.
He only went on to make, you know, like, what do you call it? The Haunting of Hill, or no.
Haunting of Hill House.
Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor, Midnight Mass, and a bunch of other amazing stuff.
Everything good Stephen King.
All the good Stephen King adaptations of late.
Yeah.
And, anyway, it's at least the genre has some possibilities, even though sometimes it's torture porny and gross.
Yep.
Yep.
So, this one, though, is produced by Blumhouse, also has solid track record, actually sometimes an amazing track record. There's
way
smaller
above average
budget stuff can, you know, honestly, there's stuff I like they're kind of, what I think of as the teen horror ones, like, Truth or Dare, or what's the man? What's the Freaky? Didn't they also do Happy Death Day?
Mm-hmm. They did,
right? Like, I wouldn't say everybody is going to like these movies, and they're all classics or anything like that. But they're pretty fun, and this is a little more serious than that. But there's comedy in it, I think. But would you guys say they're comedy?
I didn't get comedy out.
It is it is darker. I guess there's a little bit of like. The bachelor party girls are occasionally going to be like a group of girls who are like a little bit drunk and trying to figure this shit out, but it did look more serious.
I will say there probably will be comedy in there. This director, Neil Abute,
it's not like Happy Death Day.
No.
Which was kind of like comedy horror.
Yeah.
So yes, it does start out, as Randy, as you point out, it's a convenience store, and, like, what is it? There's some creepy rednecky dudes creeping up on this girl.
Yeah, one of them is, like, wearing an army cap, and she's like, you take that off. You didn't serve. And she's like, basically, she served in Fallujah, and she's kind of a badass.
Yeah.
And she basically intimidates them, and they're like, we're going to fight you.
What was it? Do we know, like, how she knew he didn't serve? Probably something like, you're not wearing the right patch, or something.
I think she had veteran sight.
I mean, like, I'm going to assume that she knows in some way for sure.
Anyone who serves in the military.
You can just look, and you kind of, you can glow.
They get magic eyes.
You glow if you've also served.
It's like detect magic. It's like every wizard at zero level is detect magic.
Now, would somebody in the National Guard glow?
Yes.
Okay.
But only faintly.
And the Coast Guard. It's like when you get those little spells, like light spells. It's like that.
Someone out there who's in the Coast Guard is like, I am going to kick their asses.
And they
rightly so.
Because none of us were in the military, and you could probably kick our asses.
No glow.
We're comic nerds. We don't glow. We just bleed.
So you people will know Maggie Q from Makita.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
she
yeah.
also was in Mission Impossible 3.
Right. That's right.
She was also in Live Free or Die Hard. She was one of the villains in it. Okay. But
she's good. She does good action stuff.
She was also in The Protégé, which is a kind of sleeper action movie with, I think, Samuel Jackson.
Hmm.
No, Michael Keaton and Robert Patrick and Samuel Jackson. It was actually really good.
I remember hearing about that.
It was anyway,
so they go to like an isolated kind of cabin or whatever. To
a big old house.
It was a big house. Okay.
But it's like in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Right. In the middle of nowhere, and the nearby neighbors are these redneck guys or their friends and they're rednecky people.
And yeah. I love the trailer is told in, like, by time. It's slowly like progressing through the night, and shit gets worse and worse.
I
can tell,
by the way, that this was not the trailer that I'd seen. That was a much lower budget movie, and definitely not from a major studio. Because of that, it had that, like, immediately I could tell there was a quality to it.
Yeah.
And the structure of using the punctuation, it's like, okay, 2 p.m. That's the incident at the convenience store. 4:15, they're having drinks. It's fun. 6:15, sun is setting. You see some guys watching from the woods. And it starts to get ominous. And I was like, this is a good... Even if it's only the trailer structure, it's a good structure. You can kind of feel the mounting tension.
Yep.
And then clearly things get dangerous and violent. And the girls are like, we have to have a plan. And we have to, like, not just survive, we have to fight back.
Yep.
Is it bad that I almost think bow and arrows, which is what they're mainly utilizing
here... The bad guys, right?
The bad guys... is like worse than guns. I mean, I have like a weird fear of bow and arrows just because
you get instantly the bow and arrow, you could get stuck and then you have to pull out the other side.
Yeah, it just
is it because of that movie, which I think you've seen as well? We need to talk about Kevin.
Oh God, I forgot about that
singularly disturbing sequence.
That was really messed up.
Because you've always secretly hated Hawkeye and Green Arrow.
No, I love bow and arrows, but I fear getting shot with an arrow.
Those guys a lot of the time use trick arrows, and it's just like a sonic arrow will go off, or a smoke grenade
or
arrow,
a punching bag.
So what's worse, being shot with a gun using mercy bullets, or being shot with a boxing glove arrow?
What?
Which would you rather have?
I think I'd rather get hit with a boxing glove arrow.
You think that? You could probably break a nose with a boxing glove arrow.
Yeah, but those mercy bullets are going to hurt really badly.
Yeah. Like, do people even know what mercy bullets are?
No.
I don't know if people know this, but in the early days of the Punisher, they wanted to make sure that they could have hit... They wanted him to kill sometimes, but to also cooperate...
He is always killed. He is always the most...
Extreme.
Yeah.
When he was hanging out around Spider-Man, he had mercy bullets, which were basically like rubber bullets.
They had paralysis toxin or something on them, too.
Yeah, they were kind of an invented thing. It was kind of like how Marvel also... I don't know, so they wouldn't make the Mafia mad, they created the Magia.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure editorial was like, you know, we can't have the superhero going around killing every single person.
Well, you know, that was his, of course, allure originally, was that he was an anti-hero, and he was like, actually, basically sometimes a villain that Spider-Man would be like, I have to put you behind bars.
Yeah.
But then when they're like, oh, people like this guy, we need to make him a little bit more, soften him a little bit, and so then they went with
a bunch of cops growing up thinking that mercy bullets are a thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, we're using mercy bullets. Those are rubber bullets. They still kill people.
Yeah.
I thought they were using real bullets. That was the mercy.
I thought mercy bullets were a thing too.
They do have rubber bullets. You're supposed to like aim them at the ground and bounce them.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Uh-huh. No, yeah. I know. It's still going to ricochet and hit somebody and could potentially kill you.
Yes.
So they're not that great.
But the Punisher, his mercy bullets were merciful.
Well, honestly, the Punisher was better trained than any cop on the force.
To go back to your question, though, yes. There is something creepy about them firing it up with arrows, and I'm sure there's probably going to be some grueling scene where somebody gets shot with an arrow, 100%. And their arm is, like, pinned to a wall, and they got to pull it off or something.
Yeah.
So I had to look up this director, because I had to know what else he'd done. He's done some solid to middling stuff.
Okay.
The one big red flag is that he did the remake of The Wicker Man.
Oh, boy. That's some bad stuff. Sort of infamously cheesy.
Yes.
Yeah.
But now, this looks a little more down to... I mean, obviously more down to earth than The Wicker Man.
I would guess that most of those movies that are the ones that I named from Blumhouse that are kind of like... They're tier down from, like, Insidious and Conjuring.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of real A-list movies. Most of the directors I don't know, to be honest.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, like... that director probably, you know, did his cheesy horror movie, his over-the-top folk horror with Nicolas Cage. But I don't know that that necessarily defines his whole career.
No, so. I'm mainly kidding. I just thought it was interesting. I was like, oh, so this person did that.
Thanks for scaring me off from it, Nick.
Nah, I thought that the trailer is really good.
Yeah, it's a pretty good trailer. I think we all thought it was at least a pretty good trailer, Randy.
And I will
solid trailer.
Definitely check it out.
It's going on my Halloween potential movie list.
Yep.
Not going on my Halloween potential movie list, but I know y'all liked it better than me. The Five Nights at Freddy's trailer.
And I don't know that either of us were enamored of it, but...
Well, I will say, it looks better than I ever thought this property that I have no interest in would look.
I had always heard from people who were not just the kids who will come up and tell you all the lore of Five Nights at Freddy's, whether you want it or not. I had always heard that it had some, like, decent lore written into it. And, at least the basic premise, which is essentially, you know, this Chuck E. Cheese-type place, Freddy's.
Yeah.
Apparently has been closed down. I didn't know that this was part of the hook. But they say, what did they say? The owner's not quite ready to tear down the building yet. Yeah, and even though it's been down for closed for like 5 years.
In true Matthew Lillard style. That was him.
Oh, was that him?
Yeah.
I did not catch it. It was him because he didn't stick his tongue out.
That's his defining characteristic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And anyway, so some guy who's like, I don't know, he looks like college student era age, well, or 20-something.
It's Josh Hutcherson from the Hunger Games stuff.
Okay, yeah. PETA? Is that what it was? PETA. Yeah. But he's still a youngish-looking dude who looks like he basically needs a job, and he takes a job as a security thing. And what is it, like his niece or something?
I think it's his younger sister.
Why is she with him? Did they make that clear?
Either he's taking care of her and can't leave her at home alone, or like the parents are gone, or some
whatever reason they contrive.
Yeah,
but it looked fine. He you know goes in there. He's like, hey, just help me watch this monitor, and then scary things start to happen.
And then a cop shows up.
The animatronics start moving around. The cop seems to know something about this place.
Have you met them? And it's like very kind of ominous.
Right, like the assumption is that anybody who's ever had this job has dealt with the sentient animatronics.
Yeah. So
and also she does we do, like, even just in this trailer learn a bit of lore, which is it seems like they might be possessed by children that they take in. There's been lots of disappearances.
Yeah, there were like a bunch of different disappearances of kids. They were never found. It seems like the kids are now like trapped in the forms of these Chuck E. Cheese animatronic creatures.
What I'm wondering is in a way, when it kind of comes out, who will this ultimately be marketed to? Is it the kids who grew up on it, who might have been like, oh, let's say 10 or so when they played this game, and are now like 18?
Are they still doing Five Nights at Freddy's stuff?
We're still getting graphic novels and stuff off of it.
Okay, so they're still doing that, but is there like still, video games
I have
and
no
stuff?
Idea. Here's what I know about Five Nights at Freddy's. It's a video game.
Right. I think they might be, but I think it's maybe a little bit... You know, it's not like there's a new one every year. I think there's, like, maybe every few years there's one coming out. But, I don't know, our Five Nights fans out there can message us and let us know.
I think I'll probably see this. I think it's got enough going for it in those trailers that...
Do you remember, Nick, that...
It doesn't look as scary as, say, like...
A few years ago, they did, a kind of cheap TV movie that was, like, the Banana Splits as horror... And it was not well received.
Well,
but I remember
they also did the Nicolas Cage. What the hell was one where he never said a word in the entire movie,
right?
But he was like he was like a caretaker who was like basically there to be sacrificed.
I forget. Yeah,
it was not good either.
Right,
but this looks much better.
I'm kind of wanting a horror movie in the haunted animatronics genre.
Yeah,
and it has yet to happen.
Well, it certainly worked for small, serial killer, possessed dolls. Why can't we have giant creepy animatronic,
that's good? It should be the time has come, and probably Five Nights at Freddy's is gonna be as much a chance as it has. It's, pretty, you know, it's a well-known property.
I think I'm getting my hopes up a little bit much, but...
Sure.
If this could be as good as Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark...
Yep.
That would be a win.
It won't be, but
it probably will not be. That movie is really, really good. I still want the dang sequel.
Give me the sequel. It does kind of like find a... That was a particular good balance for kind of all ages horror. Like, it was scary. But
it was very scary.
It was very scary, but it was
the
like...
The six-year-old sitting next to me was freaking terrified.
I bet they were. The scarecrow stuff alone was terrifying because people vomited up straw. I don't know why
their parents thought that. Their parents probably grew up on it and were like, oh, my kids will love this.
Well, I mean, that was the whole point of those scary stories to tell in the dark books were meant to be like books that you would watch, read that were a little bit too messed up for you. But, like, you know, that's like what kids read before they got into Stephen King and all that sort of stuff. And everybody who ever read Stephen King probably read it too young.
It's true. I bypassed all the scary stories and went straight to Stephen King.
Yeah,
yeah. Really kind of screwed me up.
So I think it's... I think it's... and Five Nights is doing that for a generation of, like, video game kids that grew up with it. You know, it's their kind of first horror thing.
Yeah.
So I think there's a good balance to be found here. It wasn't... You know, like, there was a little bit of goofy humor and stuff in the trailer, too. And the animatronics didn't look, I don't know, somehow didn't look quite as scary as I thought that they should.
But I'm just saying, it looked a million times better than the Halloween Express movie that we, remember the Christopher Lloyd, the
Oh, yeah, the one that was actually the Spirit Halloween.
The Spirit Halloween, not Halloween Express.
Yeah.
Yeah, Spirit of Halloween movie.
Yeah, that ended up looking real made-for-video kind of thing.
I mean, like, made-for-TV in the 80s.
Yes. So, but we're going to be watching it.
Yeah, I do.
We're going to keep an eye out for it. Randy will lurk on the horizons wondering what's going on.
He scoffs at it.
I will ignore it as if it didn't exist.
Then he'll come around when it turns out it's good.
Probably not. All right.
He'll come crawling back to Freddy.
We got the trailer for Futurama, which I don't think any of us are, like, huge Futurama people.
Nick is.
Excuse me?
Oh, Nick is.
Simpsons sucks. Futurama's awesome.
No, but you came around on the Simpsons.
I didn't know Nick was wrong.
No, I mean, I came up... Futurama was
Is the baby of the group here.
Was my Matt Groening.
And so that was...
Interesting, because I've seen scattered seasons.
I've seen them all.
But I have not seen all of them.
I liked it, but it was never as compelling to me as The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Do I like Bender and Leela and
Fry
and Professor Frink?
Zoidberg.
Frank is Simpsons.
Zoidberg.
Zoid. Well, who's the professor? Is he just the professor? Farnsworth. Oh, okay. Yeah. That's Professor Sim. I was in the Matt Groening genre.
Sure. Yeah.
And Leela.
Leela. Anyway, this show has been canceled and revived 80 times,
at least.
As everybody knows.
Yep.
And I guess its latest resurrection is on Hulu.
It is.
Yep.
I can't say it looks wildly different, but the trailer made me laugh and reminded me of fun stuff I like about it.
They reference COVID, they reference Westworld, they reference...
There's like a space virus or something, you know, like their version of COVID is happening, and so...
Farnsworth is like, I look forward to shoving that up...
No, Zoidberg.
Zoidberg is, I look forward to doing this 100 times.
Yeah, after Farnsworth shows that you have to take a Q-tip and, like, jam it up your nose, and you actually see it poking out the top of his head, or poking the top of it, and Zoidberg's excited at this prospect.
I saw Westworld in there, but they're referencing all the sci-fi stuff that came out since they went off the air.
Dune,
that was the other one, yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll get a lot of the sort of sci-fi riffs that they were good at doing.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like fun.
It also looks a little greatest hitsy because I saw, like, the Santa Claus.
And when you come back, it's a good time to do that.
Yeah, I think so.
That also might just be how they cut the trailer.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a good news, everyone.
I have a lot of fondness for this cartoon, and I'm glad to have the entire cast back.
Sure.
I know there was at times the talk about, like, Bender not.
Right.
What was his name?
Actor
John
Dimentio was having some issues, right? With I think it was like they won't pay him as much as
which they should pay him.
They should pay him. Yep,
and he's very good.
Now the question is, how long will this be on Hulu before Hulu erases all of Futurama from their servers? Since that is the new trend of streaming services.
Yeah, we're looking at you, Paramount,
and HBO Max, and Netflix.
I guess HBO Max did start it.
Max started it. Yep.
I have to call it HBO Max because just calling it Max is dumb.
It is dumb.
But it is called HBO Max.
No, it's Max.
Just called Max.
I thought like when I pull it up like digitally and stuff like that, it still says HBO Max.
They deleted everything.
I'm saying like
my HBO Max app won't work.
When I Google it, it still like says
I don't know. It maybe doesn't always.
I think they want to still pull in probably people typing that in. But like I said,
it is. The app is now Max. They shut down the old HBO Max app.
Yeah, it's actually called Max.com.
They don't want to have it be... they don't want to remind you of the home box office days.
I guess not. It's not TV. It's Max. And then we got a story. We had a story about Phoebe Waller-Bridge is talking about doing the Tomb Raider TV show. There's an interview with her.
And we
had about
talked
that.
About this before, right? It's we knew it was on the horizon.
I think I had totally forgotten about it.
Yeah,
Phoebe Waller-Bridge's big thing is Fleabag, right?
Yes.
And she's also
she acted and starred in.
Yes.
Yep.
And she also acted and co-wrote the new Indiana Jones, I believe.
She did.
So
which I'm hearing solid things.
So this is going to be a Prime Video series. We don't know much about it, and she said she really loves this character. She wants to do something dangerous and exciting, and I don't know what that means.
So there's kind of two iterations. There's the original one that was kind of the curvier one, and I'm going to say a little campier, but did actually have serious stories and all that stuff and like great gameplay. And then they did the newer one that was like a slightly younger Lara Croft. Not so buxom, but a little more survivalist.
Yep.
And it had more of an edge and more blood and
which
stuff.
Which they tried to capture in the new movie that was Alicia Vikander, which fell flat.
Right. But incidentally, by the way, those games are also good.
Yeah.
They're certainly, it's not that there haven't been bad Tomb Raider games, too.
I guess I need to play the second one. I don't know if I played the second one.
I...
Because it was
I
like it was an Xbox exclusive for like the first year,
right?
And then I completely forgot about it. Because,
but that first one was dope.
Yeah, I played that. So
you had
fast.
To run around with a bow and arrow and put arrows through the heads of scumbags.
I impaled myself in the head with many a tree branch.
It was also weirdly violent. It was weirdly violent, and sometimes a tree would just go right through your skull. Anyway, that said, I think as far as sort of what I want from it, I'm like. You know, Tomb Raider, like, bumps up against Indiana Jones, of course, all the time. Then I'm like, okay, it can't be as good as Indiana Jones at its height. I kind of like a little, at least conceptually, of the campiness idea stuff that was kind of part of the Angelina Jolie movies, even though I don't think those were great movies, but watchable, maybe.
I think they're watchable. Especially the
first
one.
But I don't know where the series is now. I don't know, like, what Phoebe Waller-Bridge wants. I don't know what people want. Do they want the... I know she's not going to do just, like, the kind of...
You know what's going to be in there?
Sexy Lara Croft. I think she's going to want to do something more than that.
Hopefully they will raid tombs.
I hope so, too. I have a feeling that this new Indiana Jones movie is going to leave me wanting. They canceled and didn't, I guess, do enough with the... what was the H... Nicolas Cage movie.
National Treasure.
National Treasure had a Disney Plus show.
Although I think
it
you
not
would,
good.
Oh,
it's
I thought you ended
Disney
up.
Plus.
You said it had
I
its moments.
You ended up liking some of it.
I liked episode one, parts of episode one, and parts of episode three, and I hated every other minute of it.
Oh.
When I talked about it, I believe I was like, oh, this might be kind of good. And then I saw an episode where I was like, no, this sucks.
Okay.
It retroactively ruined the rest for me. I never finished
it. I guess it's already off Disney. I guess
it's already off Disney. It doesn't exist anymore.
I feel like Phoebe Waller-Bridge has to have something where some special hook that she's thinking of to make it... That she thinks at least will make it work.
Yes.
You know, it's either got to be a little smarter than we expect or a little edgier. I doubt she's exactly leaning into the campy stuff, but... There must be, you know, like, if she actually, like, has a fondness for the character, kind of grew up with them, her as, like, a cool, ass-kicking British chick, then she must have some idea of how to, like, make that character relevant again. Because, you know, Tomb Raider's always skirted with relevance. It was a big thing in the 90s, but can it still ever stick around?
Do we know if she's starring in it? Is she...
No, she's not going to be Lara Croft.
I mean, I wouldn't... Say no.
No, I don't think she's going to be dark. I don't get that impression when she's going to
okay.
Sorry.
So,
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But what's the new news? Is there some new news on
no,
it?
No, there was just a story, and we didn't have a lot of news this week, so.
Okay, so that's what we're covering.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, I have a fondness for those games. Arguably, one of my favorite games of the 90s was, like, the original Tomb Raider. It was one of the first games that had, like, you know, kind of what felt like real 3D, where it wasn't just, like... You know, I'd seen 3D stuff sort of, at least semi-3D renderings in, like, Resident Evil. But in Tomb Raider, you could really kind of climb around and explore in a way you could not with Resident Evil. And that's, you know, it's in all the games now. Like, every Assassin's Creed or anything like that owes so much to it. So, you know, I hope she pulls it off.
Yeah. The last bit of news is really the big news. James Gunn has cast his Superman and Lois.
Yep.
I didn't know that Lois as well.
Yep.
Now, this is not like some like super well-known name. You know, they rarely cast Superman actors, or almost never, maybe well, voice actors.
The lowest they cast is Rachel Brosnahan,
okay,
who was Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Okay.
She's great. She's going to be a fantastic Lois. I think that's perfect casting.
Let me ask, because I guess I just assumed that I've never seen that show, but I thought that character was, like, probably in her 30s or something.
Yeah, she's a little older. She's in her 30s.
Okay. So does that mean that there's Superman will be, too?
So there's Superman is also, he is...
He's 30. Well, he's 29 right now.
Ancient. He'll be 30 in a week.
Yes. I believe that's what the age was that Christopher Reeve was when they cast him.
So his name is David Corinsweet, or Corinsweet, or something like that.
Randy, I half wonder if the thing that we guessed about him, that I joked about his relationship possibilities, could actually be something they'd pursue.
No.
Fans would freak out.
They're not gonna. So he is, I don't know if the actor is gay, but he has played gay characters in 3-4 different projects.
Okay.
And so I suspect he may be.
I doubt they're ever going to go that way with Superman, but like if there is an age disparity between Lois and him, I half wondered if like they would retool Jimmy Olsen as his age counterpart, like 29 as well ish, and then have Lois as, you know, either as a sidekick who would be either older or younger, but you know, maybe taking on the role that Jimmy does. But that was purest speculation.
I'm certain they're not going to do that.
Yeah, I doubt that they will launch the franchise with something so risky.
Yeah, it'd be fun, but they're not gonna.
But anyway, this
actor has been.
He said he's been in good stuff.
He was in The Politician on Netflix, which is a really good show. He was the sort of the lover of the main character who dies early on. Spoilers for The Politician, and who reappears as like a ghost, like a guy who sort of motivates him. He sort of sees him.
Oh, interesting.
And he was a really good. He was a really good actor. He's in Pearl as the projectionist. He is in the David Simon project, We Own the City.
I forgot. He was one of the good cops in We Own the City.
He's the lead in Hollywood, which is another Ryan Murphy project.
Yeah.
He was in House of Cards, one episode of House of Cards. I don't know much. I've liked him when I've seen him, but he really looks the part. Like, yeah, he's definitely going to make a good Superman.
And you said what's her name will be a good Lois?
Yeah, she'll be a great Lois.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I have only seen a picture of him. I didn't see Lois, but yes, I'm like, yes, does this guy look like he could do the role? Yes.
Yeah.
I'll talk more about it maybe next week, but I've been listening to kind of a long interview that Michael Rosenbaum, a.k.a. Lex Luthor from Smallville, he runs a podcast, that he did with James Gunn, in which it's a free-ranging interview, but it talks about everything from Guardians of the Galaxy to quite a bit about his philosophy about superhero movies, DC movies versus Marvel movies, and if there's a difference and if there's not, and like what he wants to do. And hearing kind of what his philosophy was and how he was approaching these made me get some enthusiasm for him, even though some of the projects like the Authority stuff and things like that don't sound great to me. But one of the things he does say in that interview is that he wanted to make sure he does. It's not that he feels that there's too many superhero movies, or he thought that's kind of a reductive way to put it, but he thinks that superheroes, that they did get a little lazy, and that they need to make sure that when you make a superhero movie, that it justifies itself, that it's telling a story that you haven't seen before or has something kind of unique about it, and that he does want to like always be story first, story first, story first. And so that, and I like to hear that, and he talked, you know, in some detail about that. So I have some hope that the Superman could come off. Obviously a lot riding on it.
Yeah.
I'm watching Peacemaker right now that he did, and Peacemaker's really good.
Yep. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about TV. Dave, just before the break, you alluded to watching Peacemaker. You have not finished it yet.
Right.
Because you watch TV at a different speed.
I do.
I, meanwhile, finished my entire rewatch of the whole season.
Yep.
Because I wanted... The main reason I did... You reminded me, I've been wanting to go back to it because I only watched the one time. Yep. But also, I didn't want to spoil any episodes, so I'm like, now I know what's in each episode because it's fresh.
Right, right.
Dave, I want to ask you something. How good is John Cena?
Oh, man, he's
great. I thought you were going to ask, did he want to taste it?
By the way, I put that on the store playlist.
Had you seen the opening, the credits?
So I think I watched them months and months and months ago, just with no context whatsoever. Or at least I glanced at it, and then but I had already even then been hearing good stuff on it, and I wanted to see it in context.
Yeah.
The funny thing to me is with the credits, which everybody who's watched it knows, there's an opening kind of dance number that's sort of highly choreographed, but also cheesy.
Uh-huh.
It has everybody who's a cast member on the show, including minor cast members.
One character who is in basically 1.5 episodes.
Yep. And, they kind of come out and do these very kind of stiff, but also sort of well-done dance moves.
Yep.
Up to and including Robert Patrick, who plays his dad.
Yep.
The whole cast is incredibly hysterical. But it is actually better to me the second time I saw it,
yep,
when I knew who everybody was.
Yep.
And I'm like, this is extra amazing,
yep,
because I know who they are. And the dance is always a funny juxtaposition against it.
Well, it's funny, when I was watching Peacemaker, and I was skeptical but hopeful, because I like James Gunn.
Yep.
But I remember, It doesn't open with it. It opens with some like before you know, it shows the Suicide Squad and that kind of
thing.
Yeah. And there's like some scene, I don't know what it is. Like there's an early scene. And then they cut to that music video.
Yeah.
And I was instantly in. I'm like,
yeah,
okay, y'all are going all in on the ridiculousness.
They are. But you know, they're incidentally, I've watched this relatively quickly for me, which is in maybe about a week or two. I've watched about over half of it. Six episodes, I guess. Six episodes. And there is some serious story underpinnings to it, which,
yes,
is something, you know, everybody knows James Gunn's movies, for like Suicide Squad and the Guardians movies, and this fits that flow. There's serious character work being done. He loves to write about damaged characters,
mm-hmm,
and that's part of it. And I think what they might have shown in that opening scene, Randy, aside from him getting like paroled and Amanda Waller saying it's like, what does she basically say? It's like, you can go if you work for me, or
yeah,
something,
yeah,
like that. But you also see the sequence where he kills Rick Flagg, and Rick,
yeah,
Flagg's dying words, which recur a few times throughout the show, and clearly like got to him more than anything. Rick Flagg, as he's dying, goes like, "Peacemaker, what a joke."
Yeah.
And like, yeah, he has like serious self-esteem issues and serious father issues,
mm-hmm,
and one of the things happens when he gets out is like he goes to visit like his dad's trailer. His dad, played by a very mean Robert Patrick,
yep,
is like a piece of shit white supremacist,
yeah,
who helps his son build his gear and stuff like that, his high-tech helmets and stuff, but we will, you know, eventually learn also was like a racist supervillain.
Yep.
Yeah.
But Peacemaker is kind of trying to, you know, in some ways excuse him because he's family and he's desperate for his approval,
mm-hmm,
and that's a running thing. And the other side of the show that's a lot of fun is essentially his support group. I say support group, but I mean like that, like as a mission support team.
Yeah.
But they are also his support group in this,
yeah,
ultimately,
yeah,
in the sense that, well, they are slow burn friends. You know,
the ensemble and the sort of like all these people have damage to their past or their present,
yes,
and seeing them all become sort of a found family really works.
Right, and it's funny because that's. It's exactly what he did in Suicide Squad, and it's exactly what he did in Guardians, and you'd kind of think we'd be, like, a little bored of it by now, or, like, it would feel repetitive, but he does approach it, like, the dynamics are kind of different.
Yeah.
Specifically leaning into the father-son stuff is good. John Cena's comic timing is amazing.
Yes.
He delivers everything so straight-facedly,
mm-hmm,
and, like, they give him some crazy lines,
yeah,
like some of the craziest shit I've ever heard.
Yeah, but you know the secret weapon of this show is?
Huh?
It's Vigilante.
Yeah, Vigilante is, like, basically his kind of nerdy best friend. Who's a super socially awkward kind of... Is he a teenager?
No.
He's
in 20-something.
Yeah.
He vibes like a teenager because,
yeah,
he's like a man-child.
Yeah.
And he like has like... His real-world experience is kind of crap. But he is also like kind of a badass fighter dude and stuff.
I mean,
yeah,
he's a literal sociopath. Like, I think he talks about being a sociopath.
Yeah. Well, there's a bit early on where... Well, not too early on.
But Peacemaker can't take the shot?
Peacemaker can't take a shot because there's a family that they think are, like, sort of possessed by these sort of otherworldly entities.
And there's kids.
And Vigilante's, like, step aside, and he takes the sniper rifle and just starts blowing their brains
while
out.
While whistling a tune.
Right, perfect,
yeah,
shots, too.
Yeah.
But, yes, he's a sociopath who, like, is also... he himself is desperate for Peacemaker's approval,
yeah,
and will take a lot of abuse, and slowly over the course of the episodes kind of starts to be like... Hey, dude, that's maybe not cool.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil things because I can't remember.
I can tell you where he is.
Has he already done with Peacemaker's dad?
So
he went into prison.
Okay, that was one of the funniest things where he goes to prison because he just walks up to a bunch of cops.
Well, right. Well, there's several funny things. One is, who's the lady he's talking to?
He's talking to Adebayo.
No, the blonde lady.
Oh, is it Harcourt?
Harcourt.
No, it's Adebayo.
I guess
Adebayo
yes.
is the one who puts him on. She deliberately puts him on that track. She kind of convinced him that he should go into jail and kill
him. Was it Harcourt?
No, it's Adebayo. I know. I just watched.
Yeah, you're right. And she's like, she basically says she's talking to him. She bails him out, she did bail him out, right?
Yeah.
And she said something like, "I don't think Peacemaker John is it, his name is
it's
John.
John.
Right?
It's Christopher
Or Christopher. I don't think he's ever going to be happy while his dad is still around. Good observation.
Yeah.
But then, like, instantly, Vigilante's like, I got to go somewhere. And you're like, well, it's not so obvious that he's going to, like, go in and try and kill him right then. But
it is. That's exactly what he was going to do. He's like, oh, I can fix this.
But, he actually doesn't do the kind of, like, he's a little bit smarter than just, like, try to walk into a police station and, like, shoot a guy. So he has to get caught and go into the slammer, too. It's like a holding, area.
Yeah.
And he goes into this back where there's like these picnic tables out so cops can eat out in the back
and smoke
and he like picks up like a trash can that's apparently super heavy and he can barely drag it and he's dragging it towards the thing to like throw it into the window
and they're all watching him
and he flings it and just like barely shatters any of the glass because it's like some kind of bulletproof stuff and so it's like very impotent looking but it gets him arrested And the scene you're talking about is one where he kind of ultimately in jail walks up to Robert Patrick, the Peacemaker's racist dad, who's been sort of like he's got himself like a group of like white supremacist thugs surrounding him, and they're like playing cards. And this super nerdy 20-something dude sits down and is like, "Hey guys, let's get to know each other. Why don't we start by talking about our favorite contributions by African Americans to U.S. culture?" And they just look at him like, "Who the f- are you?" And the insults he drops at them are just fantastic, extremely satisfying.
Yep.
I will say throughout this, Robert Patrick plays a scary dad. His dad is scary.
Yeah, he's great.
And like you're like, he's kind of smarter than all the rest of his dumb racist thugs around him. And I'm like, as I'm watching this, I'm like, I hope he doesn't kill Vigilante or some other character in this. I feel like he's going to be a problem before this series is out. You follow their sort of black ops mission teams as they kind of struggle a little bit with the morality, bond a little bit with each other. A meta plot unfolds that's about the, exactly what is possessing these people.
Project Butterfly.
Project Butterfly. Is Waller in on it or not? What is the exact nature of these alien type creatures? Who knows what? And it's interspersed with a lot of character moments. They've got people on the team who are kind of more hardcore. They've got doofuses like their computer guy, Economos, who it's funny because he looks exactly like the dude did back in Suicide Squad in like the late 80s.
Yeah.
Now, in the comic, he was played as kind of like a... He wasn't a doofus quite like this guy, but he was like a regular guy kind of guy. And I was like, wow, he actually still always... He actually looks closest to almost any character in this whole series.
He's a doofus, but he has some skill.
He does. But
maybe
as
not
an example,
the smarts.
Yes, he's bad under pressure. He like thought that like they capture a bad guy named Judo Master... Who's like this little like pint-sized guy, but who's like a better fighter than anyone?
Yes.
And he thinks that just handcuffing him or whatever is gonna like win him. And by the way, he was bragging to everybody about having taken him down when he hit him with a car.
Yep.
The casting on Judo Master was genius.
Is that somebody I should know?
Yeah, he's a Charlton character.
Oh no, I thought you meant the cast, like the actor.
No, they just cast someone tiny.
Right, it's a very, very short person. I do know of Judo Master as an obscure DC character.
Yeah.
There's lots of obscure DC references, and also, like, what's his name? Peacemaker doing extreme... This is a very R-rated show.
Yep.
It's violent, there's some nudity, and there's lots and lots of swearing.
Yep.
He will sometimes say stuff that sounds like just total bullshit, but it's like he's like, oh, I'm in the hero community, I know these things. Oh, yeah, Superman's got a scat fetish and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's just ridiculous. But they have also brought up Matter Eater Lad.
Yep.
Man, I can't remember. There are some deep cut weird references.
Yep.
The funny thing about it, and the thing that I kind of maybe is the thing I would have needed to have known to have watched it earlier, is that it does have, like, a compelling story.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was just going to be dumb comedy, but, like the Harley Quinn show is good, but I just don't quite find it compelling.
Yeah.
But this one has a little bit more of a character hook for me, and I want to know how the mystery plays out.
Well, it's a hero, quote-unquote hero, kind of struggling with the idea of heroism in a lot of ways. Like,
he was the bad guy in the Suicide Squad movie. He was the betrayer.
He was.
Well,
so he's got some ground to cover.
After the Suicide Squad, which I was not the biggest fan of, even though I love the Suicide Squad in the comics.
You should rewatch it now after having watched Peacemaker.
I don't think so.
I really like Suicide Squad.
I did too.
I wasn't super excited about Peacemaker, but when I watched it, I fell in love with it. And it was my favorite show of last year. And I watch a ton of TV.
Yeah.
So I would not have liked it as much if it was just goofy.
Yeah, it's really good. And John Cena actually is giving an amazing performance.
He's right in this.
If there were, like, you know, if award shows were a little bit more open-minded, something like this could potentially get an Emmy nod because he is just putting so much work into it. He actually can play the serious scenes serious. Because there is some, a little bit of angst and stuff in this, you know, you gotta care about the characters. But I'm looking forward to it. I think we should do a little quick recap or revisit when I finish it in a week or two. Yeah.
And there's only two more episodes.
Oh, that's right. I forgot it's a short season.
Talk more of the wonders of Eagly.
Eagly, yes, he has a. He's visiting a class of like. I don't know, not kindergartners, but they're young, like second grade or something like that. And he tells them about his pet eagle, Eagly, and one of the kids is like, why did you choose such an uncreative name or whatever for him? And he's like, why are you my least favorite person in this room? And the kid, like, immediately snaps back. He's like, because I see right through you or whatever. Yeah. And he's like, and it's like this kid breaks him.
Yeah. Well, and then there's a little girl in a Flash t-shirt who asks him, and she's like super, super excited. And she's like, have you met the Flash? He's like, yeah, I met the Flash. Like everybody else, and that is a giant D-bag. Yes. Which I thought would have to be a nod to Ezra Miller.
Kind of works.
Which is kind of funny. It's kind of funny. Anyway, it's great.
Yeah, I think we'll all recommend it, and y'all have already recommended 100%. It before.
Yeah. Nick, you and I watched the newest Marvel show, Secret Invasion.
Yes.
Dave has not seen it yet.
Correct.
Yep. But Dave is willing to hear spoilers as much as y'all want to get into.
So I think this is the spy side of the MCU.
Yeah.
Which is what I like the best.
Oh, right. Real quick. Did they drop all of the season?
No.
No, one
a week.
So that's... How many have come out?
Just one.
It's a six-episode season. First episode is out.
Got it.
And this is Secret Invasion in name only of the comic series?
Yeah. It's closer to the new one that they did that Ryan North wrote.
Right, which is basically Secret Invasion 2.
That's all focused on Maria Hill and that kind of stuff.
Right. When Bendis did Secret Invasion like 10 years ago or whatever, his had like spaceships and giant battle fleets. And
it was a whole different thing.
It was a whole different thing.
This is better. this is a sort of paranoid spy thriller. They're in Russia.
Yeah. Yes.
And they used a major MCU player as a Skrull early on, sort of set up the fact that anybody could be a Skrull.
Yep.
I thought that was really well done. I had guessed he was a Skrull pretty early in that scene.
I did too.
Like, I wasn't sure. And then when he was running, I'm like, well, maybe he's not. Maybe the Skrulls are after him.
Yeah, they did a good job.
They faked me out. And then Nick Fury comes back to Earth. Apparently he's been setting up the Saber space station.
Yeah.
But there's some interesting things about Nick Fury in this is that he is a little slow and lost a step after the snap.
A little bit, yeah. He's
like, that's a point of the story.
Yeah. He basically had a crisis of faith.
He's getting a little old. He's lost his edge, and he doesn't know everything anymore. And there's a great scene with Maria Hill where she's basically like, I didn't call you because I don't think you have it in you anymore. She's like,
By the way, this interests me more than anything else I've heard about the show so far. That's kind
of
cool.
She basically, she's talking about like, she's like, I remember when you were 10 steps ahead of everyone, and now you just don't know anything.
Right.
And he is basically, he and Talos, Ben Mendelsohn, who have a great sort of buddy cop. They've been friends now for like 30 years.
Right.
But we've only seen one movie in which that was true.
Right. I loved him in Captain Marvel.
So they did a great job selling that these guys are old friends who both have gone through some shit in the last 30 years. But the central focus of this is that back in 1992 or whatever, Captain Marvel and Nick Fury promised the Skrulls a home planet.
Right.
And they went out to find one. And now here in 2025 or whatever is in the MCU, they have not successfully found that planet for them.
Oh, right.
And as a result, some of the Skrulls have turned extremist and decided to take the Earth as their planet.
Yeah, splinter groups.
And given
to do that, they're basically infiltrating and causing war.
They're infiltrating extremist groups and causing sort of like political strife and that kind of thing. It's an interesting, it's a great use of the Skrulls' ability, but also...
I like that they called back that old story point.
It's a good use of the metaphor of that, like, the Skrulls were refugees.
Right.
And they were being demonized by this regime.
Right.
And now, because of all the demonization that's gone on, some of them have actually become sort of the terrorists that they always were accused of being.
Right.
And the way they... The guy who's playing the lead...
Is it Ben Hadir?
Kingsley Ben-Adir. Playing Gravik, who's sort of leader of the Skrull resistance.
Yeah.
Is a very sort of charming and cold villain. He like you're like, oh no, I see where he's coming from, and he.
What do you mean the Skrull Resistance?
The people who are
basically the bad guys.
Bad guys.
Bad guys.
So how much do we? Do you actually see much of them in the first episode?
Yes. In fact, we do. One of the main characters of this
characters is inside that is working.
Okay,
for
I was
them.
Wondering like whose eye is
it's the Mother of Dragons. Why can't I think
Amelia
of
Clark?
Amelia Clark.
She's playing Gia. Otherwise known as the girl, the daughter of Ben Mendelsohn's character from Captain Marvel.
Okay, okay. Because
she is now in her 20s.
Yeah,
because there's time. Yeah, I mean, I was like, oh, so that's the little girl from Captain Marvel. There's that kind of.
There's been 30 years in the mix. So yeah,
but also things have happened to Talos.
Talos, yeah, and his daughter that definitely made a change.
Honestly, I liked but didn't love this episode.
I was in love with it.
Mainly because there's a thing at the end which I hate.
I love that. And here's where I come down. We've talked about this before. I love if you can legitimately surprise me, I will forgive a lot. That was a surprise.
Can we say what the surprise is?
I don't want to spoil it for you should go in without knowing it, Dave.
Okay.
It was a surprise, but it felt like such.
Oh, I bought it. I thought it gives it stakes. It pays off a line from earlier where someone's like, I think Sonia Falsworth, played by Olivia Colman, who's always great. She's a British spy master in this. She basically kidnaps Nick Fury and is like, what are you doing here? Stop messing around. And tells him, go back up to space. You're too old. You're going to get someone hurt. And he does. And that was a payoff to that. And it made it more personal for him in a way it needed to be. It
just didn't need to be that character.
I understand where you're coming from. But actually, I have a feeling that was probably the actor saying that they wanted to be done.
But what I was getting to is that I like this show because of Samuel Jackson and Ben Mendelsohn.
They're both great.
I think they give such a good performance, and it's in subtle ways because Fury is like a step behind and older. And seeing that from Samuel Jackson, who always plays the guy that is like in
kind
control
of always a badass.
And
yeah.
always a badass,
see?
It's like giving him a little more to chew on.
Yeah, seeing Samuel Jackson play sort of the sort of guy who's a little bit older, is losing the step, it's a different performance than I've seen from
him.
And it's a different version of Nick Fury, but it still feels like Nick Fury.
And Ben Mendelsohn, I like this character of Talos.
Yeah,
he's getting to
too.
Flesh him out.
Yeah.
And entwining his daughter into a kind of like a not evil organizations, because there are still those refugee Skrulls.
They are bombing things.
They are
killing people.
But I mean, I don't know if everyone in that encampment knows that that's what they're doing.
I think you're right. I
still think we have to... There's some nuance there.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be a little bit more revealed. I wish Amelia Clark had been given a little more to do, but I liked her in this.
Yeah.
But I will continue to watch. I like the spy stuff. I like seeing Don Cheadle again.
Yeah, he's only briefly in it, but I'm sure we'll see more of him.
I was joking. I'm like, oh, so Dermot Mulroney is now the president of the Marvel Universe.
Not for long. We know he's not president in the next Cap movie.
That's true.
I'm wondering if he might be a Skrull.
I mean, it could be.
The guy's the president?
Yeah.
Although, if he was, you would think that would have been an easier way to get those two nations to attack each other.
Yeah, so maybe not.
Although, also, if he gets, get overthrown before the series is out, could they actually introduce Harrison Ford, a little sneak ending?
I think they
thing?
Might, yeah.
And then that would
might.
Get that ball rolling.
Yeah.
Pretty notable to get Ford into a Marvel show like that, even if, just for a little bit.
I think being 6 episodes, it's going to be in, quick in and out.
You know what? I think that's actually a clue. Harrison Ford is playing Ross, who last we knew was Secretary of Defense.
Correct.
And I don't know where Secretary of Defense falls in the
hierarchy,
but if a whole bunch
third
of
yeah, succession,
it's pretty high in
it's like
succession.
Like third or fourth,
so
if I'm not mistaken.
If a bunch, if the Skrulls basically take over or yeah. kill a bunch of the, he could wind up basically becoming president, being sworn in an emergency thing.
That'd be cool. Kind of interesting.
Yeah,
and a could create some interesting pressures on like superheroes and stuff like that. You know, in the same way that what's the Markovia? Sokovia. Sokovia became like a big thing that had a weight throughout a lot of the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Something like this could carry a lot of shockwaves.
I have a feeling that that will tie into it.
I hope we see some Black Panther-esque stuff in here, too. Like, the Okoye and the...
I don't know if it will.
I feel like that would fit in really well. Or Nakia or something.
Because it is only a 6-episode show, and because... Black
gotta
Panther
keep it
was
pretty
so
tight.
Isolated because of Wakanda Forever. I don't think we're going to see any Wakandan stuff. But we'll
be
see.
Kind of cool though.
Yeah. It would. I mean, I would
they've
always
done spy stuff with Black Panther, but yeah, if they're being real focused in this, are there any other like notable Marvel heroes in it?
Sonya Fallsworth, Olivia Colesman. Mm-hmm. She is playing an older spymaster in this, like MI6.
Okay,
but Fallsworth is Spitfire, right?
Union Jack.
But
isn't it?
Brian Fallsworth is Union Jack. Spitfire was his aunt, and I believe was the...
Was Gold, another Fallsworth?
Golden Age Hero, yes.
Oh, okay.
Fallsworth is his character. She is Spitfire
in
the comics.
But like Hulk and Thor aren't in this?
No Hulk and Thor, no.
I wasn't sure if they had any guests in there.
Don Cheadle is the only one.
Also, Captain Marvel could potentially make sense. She's buddies.
Yeah, she's... I can't remember if she is actually...
Well, she was on the space station, and I know Fury's going to be in the Marvels.
Yeah.
Right.
I think in... Okay, so Sonya Fallsworth is not a character in Marvel Comics. I thought there was a character who was... Spitfire is who I thought she was. I thought she was being based on...
I just know Fallsworth from Union
from
Jack.
Union Jack. Not Union Jack, right? Isn't it... Is that his name? Union Jack? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's Union Jack.
Because there's two. There's Union Jack and there's
he was ended up being the vampire guy.
Yeah, oh, okay, so Spitfire is Lady Jacqueline Fallsworth Crichton. She is a, She was a replacement for Union Jack in the Invaders comic. And she got, like, super speed powers. And I think maybe she married into the Fallsworth family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well, I'm pretty sure Spitfire and Union Jack actually got together.
So, she was the niece of Baron Blood, who is a vampire who is part of the Fallsworth family. And then, so she is like cousins or something with Union Jack.
It's all the British craziness.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Olivia Colman is amazing. Her scene in this was pretty darn great.
She's fun.
So I'm excited to see more of her.
Yeah. On a meta level, do you think are people going to like this, Randy? Or are they going to be like, oh, it's where's the big superhero punch-ups?
I don't know. I think everybody's poised to dislike Marvel now because they've kind of stumbled a bit with the movies.
Yeah.
But I think this was really good. They have not stumbled with the TV shows to me yet at all.
They'll try
no,
and
the
catch
TV
it
shows
to,
are...
There's enough interesting good. Stuff that you've mentioned. Sorry, go finish.
I think they're doing really well with the TV shows. I think they're finding their footing again on their movies. I thought Guardians was a step
Guardians
back in the
Guardians
right direction.
Guardians is sort of its own thing, though. I think they haven't hit a MCU movie that's like...
Right, but it was pretty good. Like,
Guardians
people,
3 was great.
And people liked it. I think it was kind of like a win that they needed, even if it was not exactly... Yeah, like, it's not really representing the future of the Marvel MCU.
Right, right.
But it was a good win.
Yeah. But I don't know how people are going to overall... I know critics have been kind of mid to good.
We heard everything from this is their Andor to this is terrible, so the critics are unpredictable in this, so it doesn't really matter.
No.
I think this is really good. I've liked all the Marvel shows, so I'm not a great bellwether for it, but I really enjoyed it. So.
I think if you like Sam Jackson, you should watch this.
Yep.
I'm going to try and give it a watch in the next couple days, see what I think.
And then, Nick, you and I were going to talk about The Bear... Which is on Hulu.
What is this show about?
It is the most stress-inducing show.
How so? This is season two of a show. Season one happened a couple years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And it is about a...
It's a stealth out-of-nowhere show.
It's a restaurant in Chicago called The Beef.
Okay.
They do the, like, Italian beef sandwiches. And it is very much... It is like a neighborhood institution, but they're like... They were run by a sort of a guy who was like a sort of a fly-by-night. Not a guy who got permits...
No.
That kind of stuff.
Okay.
And his cousin who's kind of like the guy who would like go in the back alley and get the beef from a unlicensed vendor kind of thing.
Yep.
And the show starts when they're his brother, the guy, what's his name? Is it Jeremy something? I forget what the name of the character is in the show. But his brother, who went to culinary school and was like doing was famous in New York as like a fine art chef.
Okay, well, he worked at essentially what Nobu is.
Yeah, he worked at the best restaurant in New York. But he has to come back to Chicago because his brother who owned the beef died. Committed suicide?
He committed suicide.
And so he has to come back and help run the restaurant.
Okay.
And along with that, he meets this young African-American girl who basically interns at the restaurant, and she also wants to be a chef, be like him. She has, like, admired him.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a mix of, like, the world of fine art chefery versus the, like, workaday line of line cooks.
Yes.
And the cross-pollination of those two cultures. And all the stress that comes with running a business.
Yeah.
Especially a failing business or one that was not set up properly, and now you've got to figure out how to make it run. There's some good stuff with his sister as well.
He's also dealing with some emotional damage.
And some emotional damage, yeah. And in the...
Hour-long drama?
No.
30 minutes, actually.
It's and a comedy drama.
Yeah. Okay.
But it is harrowing in some ways. It's also very funny. Yeah, the characters are super likable.
A few weeks ago, I read like an article that might have been like an excerpt from... who's the celebrity chef guy who died?
Anthony Bourdain. Yeah.
And it might have been an article from one of his books, or like a piece of one of his books, or it might have been a specific article he did for the New Yorker. But it was kind of a day in the life, a night in at a restaurant, where he takes you minute by minute through everything he does, everything everybody else is doing. You know, everybody knows he's a good writer, and so he and I was reading through it, and it was really like. Really intense, and I felt some of that anxiety as he talked about like decisions they had to make.
This show captures that in such a way that I feel it. It's uncomfortable, but it's like I described it as uncomfortable, but in a good way.
But this show gave some people panic attacks.
Yeah,
it was that?
Agreed.
It's like it is very intense, but I loved it. Actually, I really liked the first season, and then I think the second season is like a notable step up.
Yeah,
the second season, without giving too much away, the big thrust of it is they have decided to change the restaurant from this like beef sandwich place to a fine dining institution,
and basically having to start from scratch.
And they're it's closed. There's no money coming in. They have to go to their uncle. He's not actually their uncle,
no.
I don't think. Who's like a Chicago low-level mobster kind of guy, played by Oliver Platt.
Yeah.
And he's fantastic here.
As kind of a scummy...
The first season has a great episode where they're catering his kid's birthday party, and they accidentally put, like, sleeping pills in the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
And they're looking around, and all the kids are, like, zonked on the lawn, and they're terrified that this guy's going to come out and, like, just kill them for drugging all his kids. And he's, like, kind of into it. It's great. He is a bigger part of season two. He's like their funding, and he's great.
Oliver Platt's always been good, but I like when character actors like that get a real character to shine. Did he have a character on West Wing?
He did. He was one of the lawyers, right?
He was house counsel.
That was a good role for him too.
He's fantastic in this.
I will say that the first season focused a lot on a couple of characters.
Yeah.
Second season is expanding.
More of an ensemble.
I love like the sous chef character getting to go to culinary school.
Her reaction when the girl's asking her, she's worried. Basically, she's an older woman, and this younger girl, this girl's like 19 maybe, who's going to be.
I think she's a little older than that.
Is she like, well,
I think she's like 22, 23.
She is young. She's like just out of culinary school, and she is basically going to be co-running this restaurant. And she's sometimes feeling the pressure of that. And she talks to this older woman who was basically the line cook at this place for the longest time. And she's basically, like, telling her, hey, we're going to pay for you to go to culinary school, which is great, except that she's worried she's going to be insulting this woman who's been doing this job for 20 years.
Right.
And the way that scene plays out is so good.
Well, and also the payoff that this person has been such a... not horrible, but she's been a very mean person for the entire first season.
Yeah, yeah.
The older line cook, I mean, because she doesn't want to be talked down to.
Well, she doesn't want to change what they've been doing things.
But... I also love what they're doing with the main character, Carmi's sister.
Yeah.
And her kind
her
of coming
story,
into
this
the...
is great. And then episode 6.
Oh, God.
Which we shouldn't spoil for anyone.
No, but...
Episode 6 is full of guest stars and is a flashback. It brings back the we've seen it in flashbacks once before. The character, the brother who killed himself, is played by the
John
Punisher,
Bernthal.
John Bernthal. And he is fantastic.
In his kind of... not over the top, but he is very kind of like...
More like his Wolf of Wall Street character.
Scene-stealing kind of, I am the man kind of.
Yeah.
It's great. That episode, I was like having... My family is screwed up at times.
Yeah.
And I know some of those elements because I've been involved.
Yeah. If you have any kind of dysfunctional family, that episode...
And I'm just like, holy crap, this is like... Whoever, they channeled their life into this, and I was like, I see you. I recognize this. And it was a little, like, flashback-inducing.
Yeah, there's some great... This honestly,
the writing on this show is
That episode is one of maybe the best episode of television this year.
Yeah. Now, let me ask this. Obviously, it's got good writing and stuff like that, but, like, who would you, like, say should check this show out?
Everyone. Literally everyone.
You think so?
It is one of the best shows.
Is there a show where you're like, oh, if you like this, you would probably for sure like this?
I think anyone who liked Bourdain's writing, anyone who likes Top Chef, that kind of thing, likes to see behind the scenes of kitchens. But also, even if you don't have any interest in cooking, because I know I've got friends who don't love the chef culture and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But the, like, if you like well-written character dynamics, these characters aren't... Some people can't plug into, like, you know, bad characters. Like, I can't watch Succession, good as it is, because I don't care about them. They're all they're horrible.
Yeah.
These people are all basically, even though they're all flawed, they're all basically good people.
Yeah.
And so...
Like
and
Peacemaker.
They've got some trauma. And not unlike Peacemaker, actually.
Yeah. You can root for these people in the same way you can root for Peacemaker, even though he is kind of a bonehead idiot.
Yeah.
And a Black Ops assassin.
It is a weird thing to say, but I actually think everyone should watch both Peacemaker and The Bear. Whereas I wouldn't necessarily say everyone should watch Secret Invasion. Because that, you know, so that might hit with some
It's a little
people.
Bit more of a narrow...
But as far as, like, if you think television's a medium is worthwhile, you should watch both Peacemaker and The Bear, which are two of the best shows on television.
Bold words. And you do TV podcasts.
I watch
so
hundreds of shows a year.
So Randy's word carries the power of law.
I know The Bear was, like two or three on my list last year.
It was
year.
A big surprise. Yeah. And like I say, second season, they definitely stepped it up from where it was already good.
And Cousin Richie?
Yeah, Cousin Richie.
It was played by Evan Moss Baccarat, who was in Andor. He played the...
Oh, right, yeah.
He played the... one of the...
The Rebels?
Rebels, who basically was the turncoat.
The turncoat guy.
Oh, okay.
He plays the sort of scummy cousin in this, and he's great.
He is phenomenal in this. Every scene...
Wait till you see his episode that's, like, focused on
Well, him. But he's also, like, dealing with so much shit.
Yeah.
Like, his kid that he's got, like, partial custody of.
Yep.
Every single character, there's a hook for.
Yeah.
And that is just so compelling about this show.
Yeah.
I actually 100% agree with Randy. I think anybody could find a way to plug into this show.
Yeah, everyone should watch this.
Yeah.
All right, that'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.